is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
Just trying to remember, why didn't we do it last week? Was it because of the insurrection that Donald Trump incited? That's not a question. Don't ring into... Yes, it was. So we took a view last week not to do it, which means this is the first of 2021? Is it the first Mystery Hour of... Oh, my God, you're witnessing history live on your radio. This is the first Mystery Hour of 2021 and the first Mystery Hour, I think, since I signed the contract to produce a Mystery Hour board game, which will be with you in a matter of moments. Well, not literally moments, but ultimately, I suppose, many, many moments. But this year, soon. Sooner rather than later. About which, more later. If you don't know what this feature is like, you're in for, I hope, a pleasant surprise. If you're tuning in for the wit and insights, the astonishingly high quality of calls, the fact-based journalism, then this is completely different. It's none of those things. It's mostly fun. It's quite silly, occasionally very serious, and deeply informative. Best viewed, I think, as a celebration of old-fashioned knowledge. And by old-fashioned, I mean the sort of knowledge you used to need to have, but as some of us struggle to acknowledge or accept, you probably don't really need to have it in quite the same way on anything like the same scale anymore. In the way that it, I think the best way to explain it very simply is you now have in your pocket access to almost the sum total of accrued human knowledge. By going online with your smartphone, you can find out almost anything you want. When I was... It's so hard to explain this to youngsters, isn't it? And you know, when I started on the Daily Express, it didn't even have an internet access on the in the newsroom or in the library. That's not that long ago, you know? It's about 25 years ago. National newspaper... No internet. And the internet was still in its infancy. But the idea of doing the job of a journalist without the internet. I used to have to go to a room. The Telegraph Library was incredible. You'd go to a room, you'd fill in a docket with what we would now call keywords. The librarian would then bring you folders of cuttings from newspapers that they had collated over decades. Some of it was just fascinating. And every day they would go through every paper and cut out every story and file it according to keywords. I hope I'm not sounding like some old Werther's original. I am, am I? All right, sorry. Anyway, you can't do all that. You don't need to do all that anymore because you've got internet, isn't it? So the point about Mystery Hour is it's still cool to know stuff. It's probably the nicest way I can put it. 03456060973 is the number you need to join in. It's an indication, perhaps, of the special place that Mystery Hour holds in many hearts, to tell you that the phone lines are already full, but we will be sorting wheat from chaff, and if you are a judge to be chaff, please take the judgment calmly and politely. Free up the phone line for somebody else. If you hear somebody else ask a question to which you know the answer, then ring in and tell us. Sorry, I got distracted by Brian saying it's such a shame that that newspaper still doesn't have an internet connection. It's a very different newspaper now from what it was when I was on it. Is that it? Are we ready to go? You're not allowed to Google anything, obviously, because it's a celebration of knowledge. It doesn't matter where you saw it or where, but don't fib to me. I have an astonishingly good nose for Mystery Hour mischief. There was a fella end of last year, clearly looked it up. But I can't prove it. But you know in your heart that you've let me down, you've let the listeners down, and most of all, you've let yourself down. And the question has to be interesting. It has to be a question to which we must believe many, many other people will be interested in the answer. So it can't just be like, where are my glasses? Or that exit on the roundabout near me that no one else here has ever been near. Where did the one you're not allowed to go down, where does it lead? Actually, that's not a great example, is it? Because it could lead to somewhere really... Anyway, it is. It's bought. No, you like that one, do you? Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, but then you'd need to know where the roundabout... Oh, I don't know why I bother. Mark's in Southampton. Question or answer?
Hello. It appears to be the first question of 2021, which is quite an honour.
Okay, it is. If they were in production already, it would have earned you a free Mystery Hour board game, but never mind. Maybe next year.
Oh, bummer. My question is, can I bury my nan in my back garden?
Well, I hope not. She's alive, Mark.
No, so the thought behind this is if she's lived in a house her whole life, yes, the mortgage is fully paid off, could she, if she wanted to, be buried in that land because she technically owns that land, providing we keep the house, if that makes sense?
I think you can. I mean, we'll get you a proper answer. I'm certainly not tilting for a round of applause on this one. I think you can get a license to do it. You must be able to, mustn't you? Because some mausoleums on the grounds of stately homes and things like that.
Yeah, that was where I thought of it. And then you think of, well, if I'm living on a generic estate in wherever, can I still do that?
Would you want to? Because if
they're already dead. But
no, I know they are. But you wouldn't want to buy a house that had someone's dead gran and buried in the garden, would you? Necessarily, I don't think. Or would you?
Would they have to declare that?
Oh, Lord. Oh, we've got all sorts of questions. It's a Pandora's box of slightly morbid contemplations that you've opened here, Mark. Are you allowed, or is it possible? Because you obviously just can't do it willy-nilly.
Yeah, I'm not going to suggest. Well, yeah, absolutely.
No, you have to go through the correct channels, Mark. You have to deal with all the red tape on this one. But I like that question. Let's find out. Is it permissible? Is it possible, if you observe the regulations and rules, to inter a deceased loved one in your own back garden or front garden, you know? Anyone else thinking of the Jordashes in Brookside at this point? No, just me. 0345 60 60 973 is the number that you need. Cameron is in Addleston. Cameron, question or answer?
Afternoon, James. Hello. Question, please.
Carry on.
So you take your phone out, you've got your camera on, you point it around, and it's always in focus.
Yes.
How does it know when it's in focus?
That's a very good question. I've often wondered this myself. And sometimes it's not in focus, and then it does its magic, and then it is in focus.
And then it is magically in focus, and every single time, never goes wrong.
Well, so how does focus work on a digital camera?
That is exactly it. I think it's probably magic, but I suspect there's a better answer.
We shall find out for you. It's very true, because my phone went a bit funny lately. This is North Norfolk digital territory that you're leading me into now, Cameron. But my phone did go a bit funny recently, and I was taking pictures out of focus. And that's what made me wonder. I wonder what it is that's gone wrong, because what it is that went wrong when my camera started taking pictures out of focus will be the answer to your question about what it is that lets cameras get the focus correct.
It would be. I'm finding selfies look a lot different these days than they used to be, but that's a totally different question.
Yes, that's just age. Nice one, Cameron. How does focus work on a digital camera? And by digital, we simply mean not manual on this occasion, don't we? Because focus on a manual is... You dial it easily. No, you can still get manual cameras. You still get big lenses, which you twist a bit. Sometimes I wish you could see when I mime things. It's one of my modes of communication. I'm miming now, turning a little camera lens for the benefit of no one except Keith. And I'm not going to lie to you, he doesn't look that appreciative. John's in Woodford. John, question or answer?
Oh, happy midday.
Thank you, John.
Good midday.
Indeed.
Well, actually, I was just going to answer that last question.
No.
Oh, okay,
no.
Right, I won't. I'll just give you my question then.
Yes.
Why is it when we're babies, we sleep on flat mattresses, and yet later on we progress to a pillow? And yes, that's
why. So why can't babies use pillows, or why what? It'd be to do with your neck muscle. I don't know, actually.
Well, why should it change when we get older, or should we in fact not have pillows as we get older? I don't know.
I would very much advise against the latter course. I got a pillow for Christmas. I'm doubling down on the North Norfolk digital now, John, just to warn you. But I got a pillow for Christmas. It changed my life, mate.
Oh, I know. It can do with... why?
Because I've never known anything like it. It's like I wake up, I feel like I've been massaged for 8 hours.
Well, what sort of pillow is it?
Begins with T. And it's like tempura or something like that.
Into your neck rather than your head.
I don't know, but if you put... I've got a very big head, so maybe that's got something to do with my problems with pillows over the years. But I'll tell you what it does. If you push it down, right, with your hand, as far as it goes, and then pull your hand off really quickly, it reinflates, if that's the correct word, in a nanosecond. So
it's like a memory.
Yes, exactly that. And so it's supporting parts of you didn't know you had until they started aching.
Well, yeah.
I love
that
sigh. Were you feeling a bit wistful there for my pillow, John?
Well, You're making me tired.
I'm making you tired. I do that every day, I hope. That's why I promise.
That's because I've been staying up watching the fun in America.
Oh, can't blame you for that. Right, you're on. Why can't babies have pillows? It'll have something to do with either their neck muscles or breathing, one imagines. What were the other two questions? I've already forgotten, such is the nature of... Can you be buried in the garden of a average private home? And the digital camera focus question. Thank you, Keith. Jonathan's in Lancashire. Jonathan, question. That's a bit vague. Can we be a bit more specific about the Red Rose County? Whereabouts in Lancashire are you, Jonathan?
In Carnforth.
In Carnforth. There we go. Question or answer?
Yes. It's a question.
Yes.
Yes. So if you were to somehow manage to get to the edge of the universe and keep going, try to keep going, so you accelerate yourself towards the edge of the universe, what would happen? Would the universe expand with you?
Oh, I hate these questions.
Be outside the universe, or would you suddenly stop?
Well, I mean, who would know? Is it theoretical physics, is it?
It would obviously have to be a theoretical answer.
So if you got to the edge of... is the universe and solar system, they're different, right? There's lots of different systems in the universe.
Yeah, so not the solar system.
No.
Obviously, there's like man-made obstacles, objects that have got past the solar system with Voyager.
Yeah.
But if you
obviously during conversations like this, Jonathan. It might be obvious to you, my friend, but it's not. It's certainly not obvious to me. Anyway, so if you reached the edges of the universe, what would happen?
Yeah, so if you kept on going towards the edge of the universe, and would the universe expand with you?
Yeah. All right. Well, let's not make it multiple choice. Let's not make it multiple choice. Let's find out the answer to your question. And sort of the late George Michael there, of course, who wanted to be taken to the edge of heaven, just popped into my mind. 12:15 is the time. Can you have a human burial, in an average private garden? How do digital cameras know when the image is in focus and when it isn't? Why can't babies use pillows? And what would happen if you reached the edge of the universe? That's a pretty good selection of questions, actually, even though I say so myself. It's 12:15.
This is LBC Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
90 minutes after 12 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Mystery Hour continues. Four questions on the board. You can answer them or indeed add your own, but to do so, you need the phone number. Let's just crack on. Nick's on the Isle of Wight. Nick, question or answer?
Hello, James. Answer, please.
Carry on, my friend.
Okay, so burials in private gardens.
Just the thinking, if someone's just turned on? They expect they've just turned on. Oh, I just see what's on LBC. I wonder if they're talking about Donald Trump. And then you come on the radio at the back of a commercial break. Okay, burials in private gardens.
The important thing is that the land that you do the burial is your land. So you can't be a tenant or anything like that.
Right.
So it's your property.
Yes.
There is nothing to stop you from burying a relative in your garden. And to be honest with you, it's becoming more and more popular these days.
Shut the front door.
No, absolutely. All you need to do, you don't need permissions.
What are your qualifications?
Environmental health.
So you work in this field. You must need some sort of permission, surely.
No.
No?
No. You need to make sure it's recorded on your deeds, i.e. the location of the burial plot.
Yeah.
And when you go to register the death, you need to get a cremation form.
Right.
And on that cremation, or a burial form.
Yes.
And on that burial form, you need to put, again, the location of the plot.
Right.
Now, here comes the problem.
Oh.
Yeah? So you've got someone buried in your garden, yeah? You've got to imagine that after so many years, you might want to move away and go to a different home or whatever.
Well, yes.
You obviously have to declare that. And you can imagine, I would expect the value of the property would decrease.
I think generally it would. So why then do you think, and you may not have an answer to this, you've already answered the question you rang in to answer, why is it becoming more popular then?
because of it, the price of burials, the price of cremations. The main, in the main, the people that do these have got a long history with the land or the property. They've lived there for generations.
Ah, like a farmer or something like that.
Exactly. Almost, yeah. They've got no intention of moving away. And there are another couple of things that need to be aware. If they put up a memorial to that person on the grave, that needs planning permission. And if they then decide eventually to move and take the remains with them, that would require certain consents as well from the local authority.
Well, well, well. What's the strangest one you've come across? Like, because I'm, you know, like a sort of normal semi or something like that.
Well, the strangest one I came across, and not wanting to mention anybody's names,
oh, God,
was
no.
we had a lady came to us saying that she would like to bury her mother in her garden.
Yes.
We said, yeah, that's absolutely fine. Where's the plot? It's not too close to water courses and things like that. And she said, oh, no, we know all the rules and where we can put her exactly. We just want to put her next to her sister and her brother-in-law.
What?
And I said, what, in the same garden?
Yeah.
She said, yeah. And I said, did you declare those other two that you were planning to do that? Oh, no, we did them some years ago. Well, unfortunately, that now has to be registered as a cemetery. Yes.
Man alive. And I bet people think your job sounds boring until you start telling them stuff like this.
I know.
So they had to register their back garden as a cemetery because they'd done a sort of ad hoc double burial.
Triple burial.
Yeah, but no, the triple bit was the new bit. It was already double.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Was that a farm?
It was a very expansive piece of land, yeah.
Look at you. You're a diplomat as well as an environmental health expert. I'm going to give you a Ray Liotta. Because although you haven't actually buried anyone in your own back garden, which would have been the most obvious qualification for getting a Ray Liotta, your knowledge of and understanding of the issue, and indeed your personal experience of...
Thank you.
..is second to none. I am...
Fantastic.
Here it is.
I'm Ray Liotta, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If you build it, they will come.
And a round of applause as well. And a lot of love on social media. I mean, again, I can't help worrying about people that tuned in without context to this conversation, but you live and learn, eh? Holy moly. Christian's in Manchester. Christian, question or answer?
Answer, please.
Carry on.
So the answer to how do cameras autofocus?
Yes.
So most cameras use what's called the contrast-based autofocus detection system.
Right.
So essentially what's happening... And this can happen tens or 100 times a second. It really depends on your camera or your phone. Your camera is analyzing what your sensor sees and ever so slightly shifting the focus of the lens back and forth.
Right.
And what it's looking for is a really high contrast area. So if you, for example, looking at your face.
So clean lines.
When does the clean line appear? When the clean line appears, that's when it assumes it's in focus. So sometimes on older DSLR cameras, for example, you may see it goes back and forth, and that's called hunting. It's just because the system or the processor in that camera is not as quick as what we have in some of the smartphones now. So it takes a little bit longer.
I love it. This is vintage stuff. It's the first Mystery Hour of 2021, and it's already going to be one for the archives, isn't it? That's beautiful. What are your qualifications?
I'm a video specialist.
And that's all there. A round of applause for Christian.
Thank you.
That's two for two. If you've got a question, and now if you're new to the programme, you've got an idea of what it is all about and why everyone loves it so much, then 0345 6060973 is the number you need. If you can answer questions that you've heard, and the ones about babies and pillows and the edge of the universe remain on the board, then the number is the same. Sandra is in Cornwall. Sandra, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on, Sandra.
It's the answer to why babies can sleep on pillows.
Yes.
Because when babies are born, the bone on the back of their head is called the occiput.
Yes.
And that's really, really rounded. And babies, airways, they need to have their head in a neutral position to be able to breathe properly. So whereas if you were doing CPR on an adult, you have to tilt their head backwards to open their airway.
Yes.
But babies need their head in a neutral position. So if you put their head on a pillow... is going to force their chin down and it will occlude their airway.
Perfect answer. So it's got nothing to do with the size of the baby's head, which was a popular theory in the studio.
Well, their head is disproportionately large compared to their body, but it is the rounded bone, the occiput, that would force their chin down if they were on a pillow, and that would occlude their airway.
Qualifications?
Midwife.
Can I just tell you why I'm giggling? I wouldn't want you to think that I was being disrespectful to you.
Okay.
When you said their head is disproportionately large compared to their body, Keith said in my ear, just like yours. I don't think he's ever actually corpsed me where I've burst out laughing in the middle of a different conversation, but I came pretty flipping close just that. Cheeky beggar. Keith, you're fired. Round of applause for Sandra.
Thank you,
Sandra. Happy New Year as well. 27 minutes after 12 is the time. Cordelia is in Bushy. Cordelia, question or answer?
It's a question.
Carry on.
Can migratory birds stop migrating if they are happy somewhere?
Happy?
Like, yeah, happy. I mean, starlings are supposed to actually migrate.
They are.
And I've been feeding my starlings and birds in my garden for ages, and I haven't seen I didn't see them migrating at all.
So you think you may have persuaded the starlings to stay because you've provided them with such
I don't know, because I provided with, food to them, and they stay, and they're not going anywhere. They're breeding in my garden.
Yes.
They're breeding in my tree.
They wouldn't leave until spring. They wouldn't normally leave until about spring, I don't think.
Yeah, but that's 3 years going on.
Oh, all right, okay, just checking. So they've never left. You've had starlings in your garden for 3 years straight.
Yeah.
Well, doesn't that answer your question? I mean, that just means yes, they will stay. No?
I don't know.
No,
I don't know. I want to see, if
You're providing, and do you feed them quite conscientiously? Do you? I mean, they're never going to go hungry. There's always some food for them, isn't there?
Well, yeah, we The fact is, I'm a bit disabled,
yes.
So I can't walk.
Okay.
So
you stay on top of it then. The garden is your sanctuary, and the bird feeds
feeders. And we're buying 20 kilos at a time of grains and things like that, and seeds and things like that.
So, oh, fantastic.
But can migratory boa birds stop migrating if they are happy somewhere?
Can I change the question for you slightly? Would you mind?
I don't mind.
Can we turn it into, are the starlings in Cordelia's garden staying there because she looks after them so well?
Maybe.
I think that has a nicer ring to it because it makes it personal. But of course, that's why the quantity of food that you provide was a question I wanted to ask, because it seems to me plausible that you have broken the migratory cycle by serving them up with so much delicious grub on a daily basis. We will find out. Cordelia, what a beautiful question. Thank you so much. 12:30 is the time. Thomas Watts is here now with the headlines.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
No one says my name as enthusiastically as that chap does. I must look him up at the Christmas party. John, thank you. 25 minutes to one is the time. Mystery Hour is underway. Questions that still need answers are rather lovely, actually. What is it possible that birds who are provided with a lot of food in your garden will, as a result of their diet, not migrate? I love that question. And if you were to reach the edge of the universe, what would happen? Slightly different questions, I think it's fair to say, drawing on slightly different knowledge bases. 0345 606 0973. Shams is in Westminster. Shams, how are you, mate?
Yeah, not too bad. Quickly, regarding your game that you're bringing out.
Oh, steady on. Last time you rang in, you were casting aspersions on my best-selling book. So wait till the game has come out before you start trying to rain on my parade, please, pal?
No,
otherwise, I'll tell the cat story.
No, just a quick one, but the questions that are going to be asked. Who gets the royalties? Will the royalties go to some of the questionnaires?
No, that would be too complicated, Shams.
Okay, so just like your books, you kind of basically profit off other people's works.
I don't know that that's entirely fair, given that I invented Mystery Hour.
No, okay, so I've only teased it.
It's a bit like suggesting that if, you know, you shouldn't get a profit if you invented, oh, I don't know, a video game or something like that, and that all the people playing it should get a royalty. That would just be ridiculous.
No, that's not a comparison.
Oh, it's certainly, most certainly. Anyway, there's you off the free box list.
Question or answer? Question. When you see a road sign, this is a driving question as well. So when you see a road sign and it says London 20 miles or Manchester 50 miles, where are they actually measuring it from? Or Swindon 13, whatever.
Well, in London, it's Charing Cross historically.
No, that's if you're a black cab driver.
No, it's also the signs. It's also the sign that the mileage is to Charing Cross, because we're really near Charing Cross here, so it works really well. So other cities presumably have just got centre points.
Where is that centre point? Where are
the, how is it calculated? So Charing Cross actually becomes a red herring at this point, because it's, I mean, if it is true, and I think it is, but it's unique. Because I couldn't tell you where the centre of Birmingham was.
Exactly.
So how do they work out? Yeah, okay. Now, why are you so obsessed with Swindon?
You keep saying
Swindon. You're on national radio. You could pick any town or city in the country, and you keep saying Swindon.
Because I think that's where the
DVLA. Oh, you see, there's method in your madness. You're a apparent Swindon enthusiast. Yes. Okay, so when you're doing mileages, distances between two places, where are they measured from?
Yeah.
I like that question. I won't tell the cat story. I'm not going to tell the cat story.
No worries, but good luck with the game. No, that sounds like a really good idea. That'd be really up my kid's street.
Nice one. It's there a shame you've ruled yourself out of getting a freebie then, isn't it, mate? Would have been in the post by Easter. Thank you, Shams. How do they do that then? Sort of a short version of Mystery Hour. How do they do that then? It's a good question. Ben's in Birmingham. Are you in the centre?
Yeah. No, I'm not. About 8 miles away.
Question or answer?
Answer.
Good man.
For the edge of the universe.
Oh, yes.
You kind of have to rethink how you think the universe, because basically it's constantly expanding, but it's the dimensions that are expanding as well. So you could never actually reach the edge of the universe because it'd all be moving away faster than you could get to it.
So the universe is constantly expanding, is it?
Yeah, but there's nothing at the edge of the beyond the edge of the universe for it to exist in.
How do you know? Have you been there?
Because it's the Big Bang.
Right. Oh, so it's the expanding explosion.
Yeah.
The boundary. Yeah. Oh, did you know? Usually
moving away from everything else.
No, I understand that. So you could never get there. But even if you could, well, no. What if you? I mean, theoretically, then, because this is theoretical physics. If you got there, because you had like a magic boat, if you got to the edge of the universe, you couldn't. What? I mean, would you hit a solid wall or?
Well, no.
Don't laugh at me, Ben.
It's basically there's no dimension in it for it to exist. It's basically the universe is all of our dimension. So it's all of space and time. So there's nothing beyond there for it to exist in. It's kind of like, if you think of the universe as a bit of paper, and you just exist on that bit of paper, you won't be able to experience anything else on another bit of paper.
I like that.
Because it's not part of the continuous universe.
See, my piece of paper I'm looking at is on my desk, and I was about to say, what about the desk? But I don't think that would be keeping up with your intellectual contribution. What about the desk, Keith? Keith, what about the desk? Qualifications?
It's an example of the dimensions, because there's a story, I think it's from the 18th, 19th century, called Flat Earthers, Flat Worlders, which they all live in two dimensions. And they can't understand how a three-dimensional thing exists. Mm. So a ball travelling through it just becomes a circle that gets bigger and smaller and disappears.
Qualifications?
Because it's dimensions we can't perceive.
No, so it's beyond. It's literally beyond the wit of man. I mean, we cannot perceive or conceive of an absence of. Good Lord.
So you really have to change how you think about the universe, because it's what we exist in.
Got it. What are your qualifications?
Degree in astrophysics. I phoned in about the black hole about a month ago.
I remember, yeah. You're covering yourself in glory on this one. What do you do for a living? Do you mind me asking?
I work in a finance for an insurance company.
So I'm glad that we're actually letting you stretch your astrophysics muscles on the programme. Have a round of applause for Ben. What a lovely answer. I've resisted the usual urge to say, well, it's not exactly rocket science, is it? Great stuff, man. Charlie's in Bristol. Question or answer?
Hi, James. Question.
Carry on, Charlie.
Why does Hawaii have a Union flag in the top left corner?
I didn't know it did.
It does, yes. It's a bit strange because you'd think the Americans being so patriotic and stuff would have, you know, removed it instantly, but...
Was Hawaii ever British? Forgive my ignorance.
Sorry, what was that?
Was Hawaii ever British?
I don't think so, no. I think Captain Cook landed on there in the 1500s or somewhere, but I don't think it was a colony, no.
Okay, because that would be the obvious answer, wouldn't it, I suppose? But then, as you say, why wouldn't they have got rid of it, given that it's now... It's an American state now, right? Is it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. The furthest one, that's west.
I got offered a freebie there once. You know when you turn up at the airport and the plane is oversubscribed?
Yes.
And they say, would you like to spend two nights on our luxurious resort? It's Virgin Planes, I think, Hawaii. And I couldn't because I was being met at the other end by the girl I was going out with at the time. And I've even now, 30 years later, I quite regret that experience. I'd have loved a two-day freebie. No. It wasn't even a great holiday in the end. But anyway... It's all gone a bit North Norfolk digital. I shall find out for you, Charlie. I shall find out. Why is there a Union flag in the corner of the Hawaiian flag? Owen's in Limerick. Owen, question or answer?
Question, James.
Carry on.
When police announce an amount of people at an event or a march or something like that, how do they come up with the figure?
I think I know this. I think they use helicopters. And they would take a picture of a square and count the heads in the square and then multiply it by the number of squares that would constitute the whole crowd.
It's plausible, I suppose.
I think that's it, but I sense from your tone you're not overcome with gratitude or indeed...
I like your thinking, but I probably... Maybe a police or someone from the police.
All right, then. All right, I'll get you a special policeman to answer the question just for you. Event crowds, how do they count them?
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes the people that organise the events, I was on one of those People's March events before the war against madness was spectacularly lost, and there was huge arguments about how many people had actually been there, and I can't even remember who goes definitive on that. Lovely question, Owen. How do they count the crowds? Big public events, marches, if you will, gatherings, that kind of thing. Washington last week would be an example, or more recently perhaps the People's Vote marches in London. Just coming up to 1:45. Should we squeeze in one more before the break? I think we will. Michael is in Hull. Michael, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
The Hawaii was gifted to America by, I believe, Queen Victoria.
Was it really?
Yeah, and you don't mention Captain Cook in Hawaii. He wasn't very popular.
Because he did bad things, did he?
Oh, no, he can't. He was British. Can't possibly have done anything naughty.
You'll get cancelled if you carry on like that. So Queen Victoria gave Hawaii to the Americans, and that's why.
Yep, and I had to pay a fortune for to go on holiday with my wife there. So
qualifications?
I was there, and the native guide told us all about the man who should not be mentioned, and the fact that Queen Victoria gave the islands away.
Was there a, what's the word I want? Was there a reason why? I mean, Hawaii's really nice. I don't want to sound stupid. I've already sounded quite stupid in the last sort of 10 minutes or so, more so than usual, I would argue. But, I mean, why did she give it away?
I'm not sure of that at all. But it was gifted to the, like, what is now the United States by, sure it was Queen Victoria.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Round of applause for you.
Thank you.
It's home from home for you, wasn't it? From being from Hull and going to Hawaii.
Well, There's not much difference.
No, I suppose much of a much.
Except for the temperature.
12:46 is the time.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
Amazing scenes in response to that Hawaiian answer from Hull. I would suggest, judging by the scale of objection, that it was wrong, which means it may get put back on the board, or you may just ring in with a steward's inquiry. Peter is... Anyway, it doesn't say where you are, but I'm going to take a guess at Thirsk.
How are you, sir?
Very well indeed, Peter. How are you?
I'm fabulous, and you may take a round of applause, because you were correct.
This is on the crowd-counting question.
This is on the crowd-counting.
Qualifications, as if I didn't know already.
I was a deputy chief constable before I retired. You select an area, count the number of people, look at the overall area, and that's the calculation. And then the organisers say it was a lot more. They never say, oh, no, you're wrong, it was much less than that. No, there was only 23 of us.
There's only about 14 people there. What are you talking about, officer? And is there a name for it, do you know? Is it Jacobs or something like that? Does that ring any bells?
I don't know of a name for it, but it's just...
But that is how they do it.
Obvious, really.
How would they have done it before? Helicopters, do you think?
No. It was done by people observing.
Oh, I see.
In the days before drones and those clever things,
yes,
the technology was somebody standing on the top of a police carrier.
In a fire, yeah. So you just need to be able to multiply the number of squares by the number of people in a square. I like it a lot. How's things? You well?
Fabulous, and you and your family, all good?
Mustn't grumble. Still, suffering under lockdown. Looking forward to getting back up to Yorkshire at the first opportunity. But
it's got 3 inches of snow on it at the moment.
Oh, glorious. Glorious. Yeah. They closed school once. Did I ever tell you? I must have told this story. Because I went to school near where Peter is calling from, and one year they rang around the day before we were all due to go back to school and said, we've got an extra 3 days off because of the snow. It's one of the happiest
memories. I feel sorry for all those people doing schooling at home at the moment who are having to organise a snow day.
I don't know how that works. It's a very good point. Round of applause for Peter, please.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Happy New Year. Look after yourself. Valerie is in Lewisham. Valerie, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on, Valerie.
It's about the starlings.
Oh, yes.
I believe that starlings that are in... Well, I'm in London, so that are in London in spring, move further north as the weather gets better, and starlings from further south move up into London, and then in the autumn it's repeated in the opposite direction. And that doesn't answer your lady's question because she has them all the year round. I suspect that is her feeding. But this year, I have to say, there hasn't been the couple of weeks gap either in spring or in autumn when... There was an empty gap in the car park in South London, supermarket car park, where I feed the starlings. So I'm not sure what happened this year.
You lost me a bit towards the end. And also, I mean, I'm delighted you're here, but you kind of conceded that you weren't capable of answering the question that you rang in to answer as well. But that's all fine. I just talk me through the two-week gap bit and the car park. I just got a bit lost there, Valerie.
It's an undefinable gap, but if the starlings that are here over winter, when it gets milder further north, they will migrate northwards.
Yeah.
And starlings that are further south...
Oh, they come north to us.
...will come north to us.
Oh, so Cordelia may be actually feeding different starlings.
It is possible, yeah.
Oh.
I don't know for sure. I'm a member of the RSPB and I might have read it somewhere in one of their magazines or on their website, but that's my understanding.
I didn't realise that there was a sort of belt of migration, like a vertical belt rather than a horizontal belt. Do you see what I mean? So that the ones going north have another bunch behind them who were going north, but only to the place where the other lot set off from. I'm going to give you a round of applause, Valerie, because you're so nice.
Oh, thank you.
You're very welcome. But we don't have a definitive answer to the question of whether or not the starlings in Cordelia's garden are staying there because she's made their life so pleasant. I like to think that is the reason. Toby's in Tempe. That's a rather agreeable ring to it. Toby, question or answer?
A answer on the Hawaiian question.
It's a steward's inquiry then, a technique.
Yeah, steward's inquiry.
Yeah, carry on.
It was never part of the British Empire.
No, correct.
It was an independent kingdom up until about 1880s or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it was taken over by a coup by America, by settlers, and it had a British flag on it as a sort of like flag of convenience to get itself approvable ratings from the British Empire at the time.
Just to, as a, almost like a kind of car sticker in your window saying, we support,
exactly,
we love
yeah.
you, come and do some business with us.
Exactly.
What are your qualifications?
I used to live in the South Pacific and have a interest in Polynesian history.
Yeah, that'll do. And I mean, no offence to our friend in Hull, but you now take possession of his round of applause.
Okay, thank you.
No, thank you. 12:55 is the time. So we've found out whether or not you can bury a loved one in your own garden, how digital cameras work, pillows and babies. It's gone pretty well. Birds is my favourite question, perhaps. I want to get a definitive answer to that. Richard's on the line. Richard, question in Reading, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
Right, starlings, there's two populations in the UK over winter.
Right.
There's the resident British population,
yes.
which are here all year round.
Oh, they do have, they do, there is such a thing then as a permanent starling?
Yep.
Okay.
And then the migratory ones migrating from Europe, European continent for
yeah.
winter, because I eat for food. They come in, they stay here, and in the spring they migrate back. And they do that because it's instinctive in them. So
Cordelia's starlings are staying all year round, but not necessarily, well, not because she feeds them, but because they just live there.
Yeah, and she might even have a mixture of migratory and residential starlings at the same time.
Qualifications?
Wildlife management bird specialist.
That'll do. Round of applause for Richard. I like that. I did not know that. I've learnt so much today. It's one of the most informative and illuminating mystery hours in the history of the whole of mystery hours. Steve's in the Kingdom of Fife. Question or answer, Steve?
Answer.
Carry on.
Every major town in Great Britain had a main post office at one time, and the mileages were taken from the main post office. And subsequently, the small post offices in the villages.
Oh, qualifications?
I'm a retired blacksmith.
I don't see. I'm being a bit dense. Why would being a blacksmith?
Because with my job, I installed roller shutters all over Great Britain.
Yeah.
And I have a hobby. I collect maps.
Oh, well, there you go. So that's got more to do with it than being a blacksmith. So that's why. So the main post office would be the point to which measurements were made between two.
That's right.
That's beautiful. A round of applause for Steve.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Oh, that's a full house. We've done the lot, which is magnificent. There's a game on the way, which I've managed to mention to you. I've just remembered that I haven't replied to the fellas who are responsible for it with my huge seal of approval for essentially the final iteration of it. So that's going to be up and running soon. But I'm just going to take a moment to give our assistant producer today, Will, a round of applause, because he's just done Mystery Hour for the first time. And although our switchboard these days is generally bonkers for the entire 3 hours, during Mystery Hour, historically, it was a level of bonkersness that assistant producers often, some of them broke. There is a cupboard downstairs near Classic FM containing broken assistant producers for whom Mystery Hour was simply too much. Will has played a blinder today. And given that they'll sulk if I don't do it, Ava and Keith have done all right as well. That's all from me for another day. We'll do it again tomorrow morning from 10. The next voice you will hear on Sheila Fogarty belongs, I beg your pardon, the next voice you will hear on LBC.
There are never any voices on me, James O'Brien,
right,
I can tell.
That word in edge race. Anyway, she's here.
Thank you, I am. She's here again. Thanks very much, James. Let's start the programme, shall we, by talking about our borders. They've dominated so much talk for the last 4 years, haven't they, since the Brexit vote. And yet, when it came to this virus, no such speed at controlling our borders. The latest incarnation of this hesitancy on closing borders or controlling borders a bit more effectively is this new COVID variant coming from Brazil. We'll talk about that first. We'll hear from Rachel Venables on the cost that TfL workers have paid during this coronavirus as well. And after two, if you've had long COVID or you believe that you have long COVID, I want to hear from you. It's been debated in the Commons for the first time today. And after three, let's do it. Let's talk about impeachment.
On your radio, on Global Player, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.